Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Brian Kilmeade coming up tomorrow on the show at 3:25. Of course, we are pointed toward a Reardon roundtable on Friday at 3. Jane Duker on the panel, State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, State Representative Steve Butts, all here on Friday afternoon. A little bit later this hour, Paul Morrow, who is a retired NYPD inspector, Fox News contributor, attorney, and the founder of theopsdesk.org, will talk about some of the Trump jury selection in New York and the pro-Gaza demonstrators and protesters blocking bridges. I know Paul has some opinions about that, and I will have an audio cut of the day as well. We have Joe Arnold visiting with us in just a short time. He's got some great thoughts on Whitey Herzog, longtime Louisville broadcaster who grew up here in the Metro East. And right now, I mentioned this story a little bit at the end of the last hour about Jonte Porter. Jonte and his brother Michael were at the University of Missouri for just a couple of seconds. That was a little controversial. But now, Jonte Porter has been banned forever, apparently, by the NBA because of gambling allegations, and I think they kind of got him when they looked at the details here. Alex Gold is with Kansas City 610 Sports Radio. He's been awesome weighing in from the other side of the state on some of these issues and, unfortunately, on the Chiefs shooting, et cetera. Alex, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, good, Mark. It's always good to be out with you guys.
The thing that I think of here, and we can kind of go over what they investigated and what they discovered here with Jonte Porter is, and I'm a fan of sports wagering, Alex, you know that, and I wish we could get it done here in Missouri, but this is what everyone was kind of always worried about, and you'd be hard-pressed to convince me that Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, they're all sitting in meetings here the last couple of days saying, oh my God, do we have enough safeguards here?
No doubt. This is the biggest fear, you know, of all these leagues. I think you're right. And if you were going to ask and get a real honest answer from every commissioner and anybody involved with these leagues, is the perception or the reality, whatever you want to believe, of the integrity of these sports games and these leagues, I should say, you know. And I think this situation, on one hand, you can look at it and say, hey, sports betting being legalized everywhere is what is contributing to this actually happening. On the other hand, I don't think we find out about Jonte Porter without a legalized sports betting market, right? That's what the red flag was waved.
Yep, that's true.
And so that's how I kind of approach it. You know, I recognize that there are still some safeguards and that need to be increased and some things we can talk about. But we don't know about Jonte Porter and these bets that ultimately have got him banned from the league if it's not for, I think it was DraftKings in this instance, and another operator that said, wait a second, there's something not right here.
Yeah, a couple of the details. So they investigated, they revealed that Jonte himself placed at least 13 bets on NBA games using an associate's online betting account. The bets ranged from $15 to $22,000, totaling $54,000. The NBA said the payout was $76,000. The net winnings were $21,900. None of the bets involved any in which Porter played. Three of the bets were parlays, including one that included a bet on the Raptors to lose. All three bets lost, according to the NBA. But the other details here was that, you know, there was somebody that placed an $80,000 same-game parlay bet that featured unders on Jontae Porter statistics, would have won $1.1 million. But I don't know if it's the software or whatever kind of fishes that out and said, this is weird, right? And that's how they stopped it.
Right. And Mark, here's the thing. I mean, if you were to put together kind of the example of the most obvious sketch type of betting on a sports team or player, this was it. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing he got caught. It obviously is a great thing he got caught. But man, oh man, I mean, this was as dumb as it gets, though, in terms of going about if you were to try to do this. Jontae Porter is a fringe NBA player, number one. Number two, we're talking about player props. We're talking about a huge dollar amount for a pretty obscure player in the league. I mean, right away, that's just going to set off some alarms all the way across the board. And, you know, the one note you mentioned there where there was a wager in which betting against his own team to lose, I mean, right there, that's the biggest fear right there from the NBA perspective.
So, you know, I think there have been, Alex, some proposals out there. I'm a free market libertarian guy, but, you know, I see that there's some concerns about this. I thought I saw someone talking, maybe it was even someone on Capitol Hill, talking about perhaps limiting some of the props in collegiate sports in particular. I mean, that doesn't cover what happened here with Jontae Porter, but what are your thoughts on that?
So this might surprise people that listen, as someone that is also very much pro sports wagering and letting people have the opportunity to do that. I think college player props is definitely something that needs to be looked at.
You know,
the difference between a pro here, you know, we're talking about an 18, 19-year-old kid in college, one, way more susceptible to getting in touch with someone that
Absolutely.
Can skew the line a little bit versus someone that's making millions of dollars. The other part is, you know, the NCAA is really concerned about the harassment that a lot of these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids that are playing college ball are getting. I mean, we're talking about direct messages on social media, threatening, harassing. I mean, this just is disgusting. And that, to me, is my biggest reason why I actually think they need to take a look at the college side of player props.
Well, so we agree on that. And here again, we're both kind of proponents of this, but there could be some limitations, restrictions. You know, I don't know if I talked about this on the air yesterday, but I had a listener, this is separate but related, I had a listener that had emailed me. They're going to the Kentucky Derby in a couple of weeks, and they knew I'd been to like 15, 16 derbies. The last few years when I have placed wagers, including the last derby I attended in person at Churchill Downs, and this is why the person was asking. They even tell you at Churchill Downs, if you want to avoid the lines, download the Twin Spires app. Well, even though you can't use DraftKings and some of these other ones on the Missouri side or in Missouri right now, Twin Spires I've been able to use with no problem for maybe 5 or 6 years. So when that person emailed me yesterday, I thought, well, that's weird. I went onto my account, signed in, sure enough, they shut it down. So the geofencing wasn't there to begin with, but obviously somebody cracked down on Twin Spires.
Yeah, I've heard of Twin Spires. My understanding, because that came up even on the Kansas side at one point in time while they were trying to legalize sports wagering. And I think they got around some old language at one point in legislation of, you know, basically back with almost the daily fantasy types when fantasy football and all that became a hot topic. I don't know. It's probably been 15 years at this point. But that was just some old language is why Twin Spires has been able to or was able to operate in some of these states that haven't had legal sports wagering. They kind of got around it.
Well, I'm disappointed because now I got to send same thing I've been doing for NFL bets and everything else. I send it to Las Vegas, right? Unfortunately,
right.
And that's where the money's going. And they, you know, I saw some handicapping of this. We haven't even really talked about it, Alex, in the legislative session on my show because they're just not going to get it done again in Missouri.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it isn't. Yeah. It's not going to happen. I don't think it's even going to make it to the Senate floor this year. But I don't know if you probably are aware of today. I just put something out earlier this morning and the campaign for that ballot initiative, I think they've reached over 300,000 signatures now. They need 180,000, but they still have to get 8% of registered voters in Missouri from 6 of the 8 congressional districts. But that's the best chance for those that are listening that want sports wagering to happen in Missouri. The best path is for this thing to get on the ballot and to let Missourians decide in November.
Yeah, and I think it will pass. And look, you have people, this is what disgusts me about lawmakers, and it's on both sides, so I'm not just picking on one party, but they don't have the intestinal fortitude because let me tell you something, you probably know this too. A lot of these people who won't cast a vote for sports wagering, they're fine with it, but they mm-hmm. they think there's political risk there, so they don't want to do it on their own, and that's kind of disappointing, more than disappointing. But Alex, thank you so much for weighing in here this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
All right, keep us posted, because obviously that's not a topic that's going away. Yesterday, I want to spend a little bit more time on Whitey Herzog, because yesterday was a sad day in Cardinal Nation. We heard this reaction from Bob Costas.
Not only was he a great baseball mind, his baseball acumen was off the charts, but he was a presence. He was a distinctive character. And it wasn't just that his teams in the 80s in St. Louis won, or in the 70s in Kansas City, not just that they won, but the way in which they played, especially in St. Louis, was so distinctive. Speed, defense, good pitching, so distinctive that it was called Whitey Ball. And that idea is still in the heads of Cardinal fans, including those too young to have seen those teams play in person.
Sue, I don't know if you watched any of the coverage or listened to it. It was fun to hear the audio and see the clips of Whitey when he was in his heyday.
It's awesome. I saw a clip of him where he did not have a buzz cut, and I've never seen him like that before. It was just a, you know, normal haircut, and he looked like a blonde Pete Rose. It really freaked me out.
Yeah, a little different. Our friend Joe Arnold, who is a longtime broadcaster down in Louisville but grew up here on the Metro East, had some thoughts that he shared with me yesterday, and I wanted to get him on because obviously Joe, a very sad day for you as a loyal Cardinal fan.
You know, I, like all of Cardinal Nation, it surprised me to a certain extent at just how hard it hit me. When I saw it here, my gut it was like a gut punch. And, you know, he's a part of my childhood. You and I are contemporaries, Mark, and grew up around the same time. And he was the heart and soul.
He was the heart and soul. I want you to address what you sent yesterday in the text string, because you were talking about how Whitey, that maybe this is the way I kind of explained it. Maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but maybe Whitey, because of his roots in Metro East, may have saved some Cubs fans from being Cubs fans, right?
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, obviously Metro East is solidly Cardinals, but there are some Cubs fans there. But, you know, Whitey grew up in New Athens, Clinton County. But you also have... Reg Chandy's was open in Germantown, basically greater St. Clair County area, right? I grew up in Belleville, but for folks who are from Smithton or St. Laborie or Muscuda or Freeburg, or, you know, my grandmother from Albers, that whole area, this is old German stock. And these are, so when I saw Whitey, it was like one of the guys that you'd see at the parish picnic. And I probably did see him at the parish picnic, come to think of it. I mean, he was one of us. And frankly, he also was one of those no-nonsense characters, because I think back about, I mean, I hate to bring up a negative story, but, you know, I'm not living in St. Louis now, so I don't know if this has been talked a lot about, but I'll never forget when he yanked Gary Templeton off the field after Templeton made an obscene gesture toward the Cardinals fans at Busch at a particularly bad time in his career. And the fact that he stood up for the jersey, he stood up for the fans. He didn't seem like one of those guys that would be very comfortable in my neighborhood growing up.
You know, that's an interesting point, because we love Tony and what he did for the team, but he's not really one of us, right?
No.
I think it's probably a little different. I like that point, though, Joe, about Whitey. What do you remember? I mean, I have such great memories from the 80s, because that's when I moved here in 1979, 82 happens. And then, you know, obviously, let's talk about 1985.
Well, basically, 1985 was a special year. We had lost Bruce Sutter to free agency to Atlanta. We never replaced him. When we went to spring training, I was supposed to be the first guy fired. We were supposed to finish last. Yet we end up winning 101 ball games, losing 61. Could have won the World Series in six games. We didn't score much. I mean, runs, we only scored 14 runs.
And then there was Don Dechinger, so you had that. But that was a magical year. And I think I'd forgotten until Tom Ackerman and you know, some others yesterday reminded me about the predictions for that 1985 season. They, you know, he thought he was going to get fired. The Cardinals supposed to be the worst, and they go on one of the best records they've ever had in league history or in team history.
And that was the year, I mean, as far as just the excitement, by the way, the Heat Is On was the theme song of that year. Remember that the Heat Is On?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to. So, I mean, it was Celebration in 82, the Heat Is On in 85, and it was the brand of baseball that, frankly, Rob Manfred and baseball has been trying to get baseball to play again, because it was running and gunning. It was fun. And no offense to the Cardinals of this season or the last several seasons, but it seems it's become very corporate and businesslike and data analytics. And can we live up to, you know, if you have this barrel rate and you have this launch angle and you have this kind of, ultimately it should all work out. Whitey was in charge of winning. Whitey was in charge of having fun. Like, let's put this player in because he is going to be the spark plug. And I think he certainly, there was no better judge of talent in baseball, but also a judge of heart. And that's the kind of baseball that I grew up on, which is why, Mark, there are times where I might get a little cranky about the Cardinals.
Joe Arnold. Sue, we've never experienced that.
I don't know what he's talking about.
But no, that's because, and I think everyone listening can relate to that because we have such deep passion and love. Look, it frustrates me. I said this last year because my Fred's like this too. You know, I'll go home, get things settled with the family, eat some dinner, do things with my daughter. I like the later games this week because even though we had a day game today, because I can sit back and listen to the game or watch the game. It's part of what I enjoy to do. It's not very enjoyable when the team's not very good, right? You're looking for distractions. They've been a great distraction. We're passionate about our team here in St. Louis.
But also the fun part. And I think competition can be fun. It isn't. It's not all a business. And that, to me, was what he was all about. Obviously, he grew up with the game. You know, he played longer than I realized, looking at his obituary as far as like 8 or 9 years, but he was not a great player. He just knew baseball, and it was just fun. And obviously, the personality went a long, long way because he was as much of a A-list celebrity in St. Louis as anybody else.
So, Joe, the Cardinals lost today 6-3 to the A's, but they do win the series, which is a good thing. I think that puts them, a game under 500. They come back home. They got the Brewers this weekend, make some noise. But, look, we're seeing – let's just kind of wrap it up this way. And Scott Jennings and Joe and I are on a text string, and we complain about the Cardinals. Or maybe we say some nice things or we express sadness over Whitey. But we're seeing some of the same things that we saw last year, which is problematic.
No, I mean, you have to score runs. If you want to win, it's like the old lottery thing. You can't win if you don't play. Well, you can't win if you don't score, and that basically is the St. Louis Cardinals story. I have to come back to Whitey though as we wrap up, Mark. I don't know exactly what's going to play in there, but when I turn on the ball game, I hope I see the number 24 etched into the outfield grass, and I hope that there is a patch. I don't know what all the plans are, but I think that there could be some magic, some Whitey magic in this team.
I talked about that a little bit yesterday, and I absolutely think what you just said, we're going to see some things this weekend when the fans turn out to Busch Stadium. And I'm guessing there's going to be a big, extended celebration of Whitey as the season moves on as well. Absolutely. Joe, thank you so much for weighing in here this afternoon. Hey, we got Derby 150 coming up in like 2 weeks, so we'll touch base then.
Come on down.
All right, we'll see you.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Listen to this from Harlem in New York last night. Now, they're not cheering for President Biden. Those are people in Harlem cheering for President Trump. He was talking about crime at that bodega.
This is a very exciting time for me because the bodegas, the association invited me, and I respect them and they respect me. They want law and order. They have a lot of crime, tremendous crime, where their stores are being robbed. We're going to come in and number one, you have to stop crime. We're going to let the police do their job. They have to be given back their authority. They have to be able to do their job. It's Alvin Bragg's fault. Yeah. Alvin Bragg does nothing. He goes after guys like Trump, who did nothing wrong. Violent criminals, murderers, they know there are hundreds of murderers all over the city. They know who they are. They don't pick them up. They go after Trump.
You know, that is an interesting juxtaposition that I really can't argue with from the former president. Now, you know, his trial's going on in New York City. He's complaining about that, and there's some audio from that particular. By the way, I thought it was Buttigieg. Isn't that what Jill Biden said?
It was Jill. Bodega. Yeah, you're right. Bodega.
Paul Morrow is back with us, Fox News contributor, retired NYPD inspector, and founder of the opsdesk.org. How are you, Paul? Interesting trip to the bodega, right, for President Trump?
Oh, yes, it was. It was. He's very popular there, which is something that, you know, a lot of the progressive media doesn't want you to know. But there's a real groundswell for him here.
I always try to assess these things in a way. Let's say it's not President Trump. Let's say it's Biden or Kamala Harris is up on the same charges here or whatever. Would I be questioning why this is going to trial? I'd like to think that I was because I've attempted to look at this one from a variety of perspectives, the so-called hush money trial. I'm not sure. What's the crime, Paul? He says that. What is the crime in your mind that he's being prosecuted for here?
I can't ascertain it. I mean, technically, the charges, 34 charges of falsifying business records, as we all know, it wouldn't even come under the statute of limitations if he hadn't come up with this idea of using a phantom second crime. Because if you have the falsification of business records in service of a second crime, it then becomes a felony in New York law, and that gives you a 5-year statute of limitations. The problem is he hasn't named, that is, Bragg has not named that second charge. He still has not told the Trump defense team, nor has Merchan, the judge, forced him to. And I've been arguing vociferously that at some point here, they, of course, have to reveal what that charge is. And then once they do, I think we're going to see a blizzard of motions from the defense team. Because if it's a federal crime, which a lot of speculation is that it is going to be a federal election crime, because obviously Trump was engaged in a federal election at the time, running for president, Alvin Bragg doesn't have jurisdiction, and the entire apparatus falls apart. So a lot of questions around this, and I can tell you as somebody who pitched cases for about 25 years to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, if I had walked in with this construction, I would have been shown the door. Because I can just tell you, this has never been done.
You know, and I have not heard many people outside of you talking about this second charge. How in the world is that something that under the law is allowed?
It shouldn't be allowed. And Merchan is, in my opinion, wasting all of our time. You should have forced Alvin Bragg to file what's called a bill of particulars here in New York. It's a legal instrument that essentially says, give us the details of what it is you're going for here. And, they, you know, from what I see, and it's on, you mentioned the Ops Desk, it's up on the opsdesk.org right now. I go through all of this, and I see three charges that he could potentially be bringing as this phantom second charge. As I said, one of them is federal, and that doesn't hold water.
Yeah, because second you said one, Bragg doesn't have jurisdiction over that, right?
He doesn't have jurisdiction. And furthermore, as Andy McCarthy, another Fox News contributor, has spelled out, if that is the case, if he's invoking a federal charge as the second charge, well, then what is the limiting principle? What prevents him from saying, oh, by the way, the second charge is a violation of tribal law or Sharia law? Yeah. I mean, in other cases, what would be the limiting principle there? So there is none because it's not spelled out in the law.
All right. So that's one option. But you say that it could be an election law violation for New York City, right? Or New York State.
For New York State, right. So obviously the legislative intent is that it should be a state crime, and I see two that could potentially qualify. One is a tax charge, and one is a state election law charge. The problems there are twofold. First of all, if it's a state election law charge, it was a federal election, again, as I said at the top, and so that's a problem. But also, if it's either of the state charges, why didn't Bragg just charge it? He's a state prosecutor, and as a result, he leverages New York state law. Why didn't he just put that up front? The point is, he's so contemptuous of not only the ex-president, but of those who are in sympathy with Donald Trump, that he doesn't feel any pressure to even bother to elucidate how it is we got where we are, and this judge has not forced him to. And while a lot of people think that Trump's gripes against Merchan are merely gripes and they are academic, I think that to me, that's a tell. Merchan should be saving all of us time and making Bragg spell this out.
Paul Morrow is back with us. Explain, because I will tell you that I'm a little confused on the questions about the statute of limitations, because you make the case that the math doesn't really work here, right?
Right. So when he came to charge this, first of all, let's understand something. Everybody passed on this case. This case was brought to the feds. It was brought to the DA's office. They passed on it. It wasn't until a guy formerly with the DA's office wrote a book that Bragg felt pressured into it by the book and also some of the people on his staff to bring the charge. So then he had to jump through hoops and come up with this thing, and he got to figure out a way to get it under the statute of limitations, which, as I said, for a misdemeanor, which is normally what falsifying business records is, the statute of limitations is 2 years, and you were well past that. So what he did was he used this codicil that is in the statute that says if you falsify business records in service of a second crime, it becomes a felony, an e-felony, the lowest level felony, but the statute of limitations becomes 5 years. They still were not under that, but the break he got was that during COVID, the governor, Andrew Cuomo, told that it stopped the statute of limitation from running because the courts were closed, and he gained 10 months there. And so, yeah, a lot of people haven't gone through this math, but like I said, I do on the website. So he charges 34, leveraging those extra months. The problem is, when I do the math, and I did, he still loses about 22 of the counts. So I don't understand how he's going to get that in under the wire. And once again, it's another thing that Merchan, you know, should be forcing to elucidate. I'm sure the Trump people have filed motions challenging
all
of this.
Right, you would think.
And the judge just doesn't seem that interested, but it's all going to fall apart on appeal.
Yeah, and Paul, you also point out, I want to, because I think people had forgotten a little bit about this, that, and you've talked about this before, that CNN's reporting of the 34 counts came a week before the indictment, right? So they had a leak there, and there's a violation of the law involving the leak.
Mark, this drives me crazy, and I don't want to rant and rave, but this was a genuine crime, entirely, much more empirically demonstrable. I wrote a piece for, oh God, I forget where it came out, but you know, it was either the Wall Street Journal or Fox News. I think it was FoxNews.com. But, you know, trying to raise this issue because I don't understand why the Trump people didn't walk into the Fifth Precinct, which is where the court is located, and told the desk sergeant, my name is Donald. Trump himself should have walked in. What a stunt. What a move that would have been. It would have been a little bit of a stunt, but it would have been completely justifiable. Walk in. Go to the desk sergeant, say, my name's Donald Trump, and I'm here to file a felony complaint. And the felony complaint is leaking grand jury information. CNN reported precisely accurately before the indictment became public, before it even was released, that there were 34 counts and everything was accurate. That was leaked by Bragg's office to begin to dirty up Donald Trump. That is a genuine e-felony. It's a black letter felony. I don't understand why they didn't go that route, because it would have thrown sand in the gears of the Bragg prosecution right from the get-go. That one I don't get. They could have done that, and they should have.
You know, there's so many of these things that should be highlighted, and everyone should be concerned, because as you point out, Paul, this goes to the credibility of the justice system, which I think has been on the line here for a while, and let's face it, it's not getting any better. But people have such Trump derangement syndrome that they can't look at the facts of this case and say, as you say, there'd be nobody else on the planet. Nobody on the planet would be prosecuted under these statutes except for this guy, Donald J. Trump.
That's exactly right. And I can tell you, you know, in the ops desk, my partner is the former commanding officer of financial crimes. He brought literally hundreds of financial cases, many of them with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. And I can tell you right now, they wouldn't have entertained this for a millisecond. It's an add-on charge, generally a misdemeanor, that you just throw into the mix to kind of give a clearer picture of the narrative. But it's generally used just as something that you add to another felony. And, you know, the people have looked at it. It's just not done this way, and it's barely defensible. But you know what? Go on the New York Times and look at the comments, and then you get a sense in the comments of the New York Times of the jury pool that Donald Trump is up against here. And really, he has no chance of a fair trial, in my opinion.
Paul, I wanted you to address one more thing, just because we talk about this a lot here in St. Louis when it comes to crime numbers. We've had some disputes over the accurate reporting of crime numbers. There is a sociologist who is at St. Louis University who's tried to break down some of these numbers. He did not for a while get accurate numbers from St. Louis. And this is not something that is limited to our city here in Missouri. And, you know, we still hear from people. I hear from people all the time. Crime is down. Don't you know crime is down? But it's interesting the way that they use the numbers. This is another math situation, I think, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is. And what they do is they look at an incremental drop from this year over last year. And that's just comparing bad to worse. You know, it's like going from the penthouse to the 14th floor. Go back to before the criminal justice reforms. Go back to before the spasm of defund, which came about in the summer of love 2020 after the George Floyd incident. That's the metric that we should all be using. Now, to be fair, COVID is part of that as well. COVID didn't help matters. A lot of people were home, people, kids were not socialized. And I think that's been underreported. How many students, high school students, et cetera, just really didn't go through the socialization process that schools normally have. And a lot of that's been coming home to roost. But if you compare where we are now to where we were in, say, 2019, we are still way up. In New York, we're up a full third in the seven major felonies. And you know what? Speaking nationwide, I can just tell you that last year, despite the fact that people are crowing that things are getting better, we had the highest aggregate number of homicides in America last year than we've had since 1996, which is when broken windows policing really began to take hold. And that's no accident, because that's when things began to get better. And the other thing is that quality of life crimes these days just don't seem to count. Under the decarceration movement, people just shrugged them off, but they matter, and they're quality of life crimes. They called that for a reason. They denigrate all our qualities of life.
I mean, one of the things that happens here, and probably in other cities too, you have a parking lot that is broken into, and there's 30 cars that have their stuff stolen out of it. We have a colleague, Sue, I didn't get permission to use his name, but someone from the KMOX side who parked at the airport in one of the lots was ripped off when he went to New York last weekend. But if you got, let's say you got 30 cars, they report that sometimes as one incident, Paul.
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of the playing around that you can do. I can tell you in NYPD, those days are over. There were all kinds of FOIL requests and lawsuits and stuff like that. So there is an entire unit that does quality assurance. But, you know, that stuff comes down to a resource issue. If you don't have enough bodies, if you can barely fill the spaces on the street that you want to fill, you don't have the luxury of having all of these quality assurance units that True. Make sure that you're not fudging numbers. And the other thing that happens is that the prosecutors downgrade everything. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can just fudge these numbers. You can say, well, you know, the arrest was DP, the declined prosecution, so it doesn't count. And now you've just taken a whole percentage of the crimes off the table. You have to charge, you have to count what the police charge. And if you don't do it that way, you're really not capturing accurate numbers. Yeah. But unfortunately, a lot of cities don't do that.
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't. Paul Morrow, always great information. We really appreciate it, especially because some of this really does apply, sadly, to St. Louis and what we've gone through. You can check out theopsdesk.org at any time. Sign up for the newsletter. Paul, have a great week.
You guys, too. Thank you.
Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, Odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With All Trails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with All Trails.
Audio cut of the day coming up here in a second. You know, it's interesting to me, even when you have, it's ironic perhaps, when you have a guy like Yuri Berliner, who is at NPR, he's been there for decades, he comes out, he writes a piece about how they're so politically biased and he's concerned about, you know, what his world has become at NPR. By the way, he's done. They suspended him. And then he finally resigned today, forced out. But I even love the legacy media coverage of the state-run media is interesting. Here's the Washington Post headline, turmoil at NPR after editor rips network for political bias. But then the subheadline is the public radio network is being targeted by conservative activists over editor's essay, which many staffers say is misleading and inaccurate. Well, yeah, they say it's misleading and inaccurate, but it's not.
No.
And, you know, nobody's, maybe we're targeting it, but some of us have been talking about NPR. This is ironic because Yuri Berliner's been at NPR for 25 years. I've literally been talking about NPR for about 25 years and how we should defund it. And I'm feeling more confident than ever that that should be defunded because it's outrageous what happens there. And they've been not, in fact, the opposite has happened. I was going to say they have not been able to shoot down any of the allegations that he's made.
Of course not.
And now they have the new, you know, CEO that's absolutely bat blank, you know what, lefty anyway. So it is what it is. I don't care what you want to do. They have an audience of people that only want to hear that type of news, mm-hmm. just like MSNBC. The
just
difference is
it.
We're not, yeah, admit
and we're
it,
not funding
and
it.
We are not subsidizing it, right?
Yeah.
So I have an audio cut of the day picked out, but let me go back to what he said with Barry Weiss. The Free Press is actually the publication that printed this. And Barry, who left the New York Times because of the same stuff, by the way, at least the same themes, sat down with Yuri Berliner.
I think after a while we started covering Trump in a way that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, you know, I think we sort of learned the story kind of disappeared.
Yeah, they didn't correct that. He pointed mm-hmm. that out in his essay. And then this number, which most of us were like, well, we knew that.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration among our staff. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, 0 Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting. And I said, hey, look, something's gone wrong here.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Yuri, most newsrooms are like that, especially newspapers. But who would have expected any Republicans to be at NPR? That's one of the things that bothers me about his whole take on this is that none of this has been secret to many of us anyway. He just exposed it because he was from the inside. So here's Matt Taibbi today, of course, he of the Twitter files, talking about this.
I've been waiting for years for somebody at NPR to speak out about the obvious problems that the network has. It's been losing, you know, listeners rapidly for quite some time. And frankly, its biggest problem isn't losing conservatives, but really people like me who grew up listening to it and liking it and now can no longer tune in at all. And so finally, he wrote his essay in the Free Press and made some very legitimate criticisms about their coverage failures, among other things. And for him to be forced out of the organization is a rather remarkable development. I would have thought they would have gone out of their way to try to keep him.
Well, it's hilarious. So,
nope.
No, I would have not expected that. I think I knew that he was going to be gone. Got to do this, though.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
It's just my favorite piece of audio because what this is, it's more like we call it nat sound in the broadcasting world, natural sound. This is a pro-Hamas protester on the Golden Gate Bridge screaming in pain, thankfully. I hope he was in a lot of pain as police and fire officials try to remove him from the concrete barrel that he, on purpose, put his arm in on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Genius. Let go of the bar.
My hand.
Let go of the bar.
Oh, it's awesome.
Let go of the bar.
Yeah, he wouldn't do it. They finally got him out. But you know what? This is the most satisfying, glorious piece of video and audio that you will see all day, ladies and gentlemen. And I provided it to you in the form of audio cut of the day. Have a great night. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.